Off the Ball. In relation to the difference between the assistant and the manager, I did feel pressure as a coach to perform and to put on the right sessions and so on. But ultimately, the overall responsibility falls on the manager's shoulders. And now I have that feeling, you know. You could imagine the feeling I had after back-to-back defeats with Athlone and Wexford. It was tough, and I sort of knew how the likes of Tony felt after defeats, you know.
Probably after a month there, I kind of knew that I didn't want to stay, that I was unhappy. I wasn't really playing, like even going to training and that I didn't enjoy. Like I couldn't, like when we were warming up for training, like I couldn't wait to training to be over, and that I didn't enjoy like my time there really. So like it was a good offer and something I was really happy to do, to move home and play with Bows.
How long is it each way?
From my house, probably about 3 hours 15 minutes. Nearly always be home before 12 in bed. So it just depends on obviously my next day schedule, and obviously recovery is even more of an emphasis this year compared to last year, with sleep and rest and like changing how I'm training and stuff. Like
the best League of Ireland podcast in the business, brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store. This is Off the Ball.
Hey, it's Jamie Moore here. You're very welcome to the latest episode of the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast, coming to you from Marconi House here in Dublin. If you're listening to the podcast and you want to watch it, you can watch our three interviews on youtube.com/offtheball. We had the Bray Wanderers manager Gary Cronin in studio talking about the pro licence and being the Bray manager and working with different managers across different parts of football, and how all of those experiences shaped him as a manager for Bray, currently top of the First Division. We'll be joined in studio by James Finnerty, playing for Bohemians. He was at Aston Villa as a kid and also played for Rochdale. He's now back and has started all of Bow's games. They've had a really good record, and he's also scored a goal. He'll tell us how he has to work on his celebrations coming home from the UK and plans for the future. And Dan O'Reilly of Finn Harps, why he left Longford to join Harps, how he's dealing with the travel, working as well as a personal trainer, and hopes to beat Derry City in the Donegal Derry Derby this coming weekend. So let's get the show on the road on the latest episode of the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast.
Off the Ball's League of Ireland podcast, brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
We're very happy to welcome a League of Ireland manager to the studio, and he's a manager of Bray Wanderers, currently doing really well in the First Division. Mr. Gary Cronin, how are you?
Not bad, Jamie. How are you?
Great stuff. Now, Gary, you had a dramatic evening on Monday. Your League Cup game against Shamrock Rovers went all the way to a shootout, and you managed to win it in the end. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a late night, and it was a fantastic win for us in the end. You know, it would have been devastating to go all the way to penalties and not get through in the right end. Obviously, it was tough on Rovers, but it was a fantastic game. I thought it was a great game. Obviously for the neutral to watch, even though it was a nil all, there was a lot of chances in the game, and I think we might have deserved to be in one or two up at half time. And as the game went, you know, we stayed in it. That was our game plan, you know, to try and stop Rovers playing through the centre of us, and we done that quite well, and the lads were fantastic and made a few changes, and the lads that came in carried out their jobs very well. And I think overall it was a great night for us, you know.
How do you handle when it goes to penalties? Do you ask the players who wants a penalty? Do you have your list done out, and do you bring a sub on last minute who might be a good penalty taker?
Well, funny you should ask that. It was something happened the other night that's never happened to me before in relation to penalties. The fourth official came over to us and asked us to take player off. And as it turned out, Rovers were down to 10 men for the last 5 minutes of extra time.
Okay.
And I was, why? Why do we need to take a player off? And that's the rule. So we had to have 10 players, which makes sense, even numbers. So we had to substitute Huey for the penalties. Well, he volunteered, obviously. But look, throughout the whole, I asked the players. I want the players who were confident at the time. And generally, you know, you get no surprises with that, you know. And the lads stepped up. To be fair, they were excellent penalties, 4 out of 4. And we didn't have to go to our fifth penalty, which is fantastic.
So what happens if someone puts a hand up and goes, I want to take a penalty, gaffer, and you think he's not going to be a good penalty taker? Do you say, well, I actually don't think you should take one? But then if it goes to sudden death and he has to take one, he knows you have no confidence.
Yeah, well, look, if we don't say it to him, we look, if there's an influx and there's seven and only five takers, I'll just pick them, like, you know. And we had it before with Longford, actually, in a Finn Harps game, the FAI Cup replay up there. And I remember Martin Deedy said to me on the left full, he was from Cove, and picking between two players, and he said, well, pick me because I'm going to score. And there was a silence for 5 seconds. He went, okay, and he put it in the top corner in the winning penalty. So you go with the confident players, I think, you know, and that's the way it works. As long as they hit the target, we have a chance. But what I will say to you as well, the goalkeeper, our goalkeeper Gabby Savo, was excellent on the night, and he pulled up a great save from Aaron Green. Obviously Brandon Cavan was unlucky with his penalty, but he said to us in the shootout, lads, if you score, I'll save him, and he did. You know, it's the confidence part.
Yeah, how have you found the season overall so far? Obviously, you took over kind of midway through last year and things didn't go well in the Premier. You've managed now to sign your own squad, start the season well, I think, with three wins. There's been a little bit of mixed form since, but you're up towards the top and you can probably really see that it's your team now.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that taking over last year when we spoke to Niall that, you know, it was probably inevitable. Obviously, we try and win games and so on, but we had an idea where we were going to go. And when you build your own team, that's when you're judged, you know, and worked hard to try and get the players in, obviously tried to get some other players in, and it's been fantastic for me so far. But there's a lot of challenge ahead, you know. Up until now, we started really well and we had four wins. We had the League Cup win also over Wexford and the three league games, and, you know, we were tight at the back, which is great, but we had two back-to-back defeats then, brought us right down to earth, and that's what the game does. And I think it's going to be a really competitive league, as you see how the results have gone. And I've been to watch Longford a couple of times, and you look at them and they're unbeaten and they're not conceding many, so there's a lot of teams there that will fancy as well. Cavan Teely have had a great run since we beat them at the start of the season, so it's going to be competitive.
Yeah, and I suppose the fact that you lost those back-to-back games against Athlone and Wexford, who were the two whipping boys last year, Wexford were this season until they beat you guys, and Athlone, as we've spoken about on this podcast before, are much improved. But that probably shows where the league is, that there's no team in it that you're, well, like, I thought you were going to go against Wexford and win well, and you just didn't. Like,
yeah, it just didn't happen. And to be fair, what I will say, I spoke to Point O'Sullivan afterwards, and obviously they're delighted, you know, that's what the game does. But you know, it wasn't from a complacency point of view. I have to say that it wasn't from an effort point of view. Really, we just didn't take our chances. And it would have been fair to say, you know, at half time, if we were three up, it would have been a fair reflection. And that's taking nothing away from Wexford. They done really well on the night. I believe that was the best they played. But from our point of view, we didn't take our chances, and we had only ourselves to blame on that. And we were anxious then to try and get that goal. But what I will say then, you're always leaving yourself open to something like. I think it's Rob Nugent.
Unbelievable goal.
Hit a great strike, and it was unstoppable. And you're analysing it afterwards. You're looking, going, who can I look at to see who could have done something better? Or didn't do their jobs, and there was nobody. It was just an unbelievable strike, and unfortunately, that gave them the confidence. And the second goal was a free goal with the way the incident happened, but it was a great finish for Jack Doherty, and we just had to take it on the chin, unfortunately, and move on.
Yeah, we spoke last week on this podcast to Declan Ryan from Instat, the head of Instat in the UK and Ireland, about the Premier Division clubs using the tool to watch the videos after the matches and all that sort of stuff. And I know all the clubs in the First Division don't have access to that, and you mentioned, you know, looking back on your own games and doing some analysis.
Yeah.
How in-depth do you go, and what tools do you have as the Bray manager in terms of video and stats and stuff to help your group?
Well, it's a tool that's really improved the game, I think, and it really improves player development, because a lot of the times I remember being a player, you remember this incident, you remember that, and really the picture changes, you know, in your head. So it's an essential tool. Basically, I have the games recorded by a video analyst, and, you know, my own point of view, obviously, starting off and having my own team, I like to analyse it myself. You know, I think most managers would. You can have the main events clipped, obviously, by someone else, but you need to see what you're looking for and what you're trying to put on the training ground as it's coming out on match day, and you need to have a look at that yourself. So you need to listen as soon as possible, look through the games, and we use it too well, because it's great for me to be able to show the lads what we've done really well and where we need to improve on, and that's what the tool is for.
Yeah, and they say League of Ireland managers are obsessed with football, and I'm sure you are. So you've played on a Friday, you've won, you've drawn, or you've lost. How soon are you watching that video? Like, I know some managers, if they've had an away game, straight away on the bus, they're with the coaching staff, they're looking at the key incidents so they can see it from a height and see if their original opinion on the sideline is actually the case.
It's funny you should say that, because when I started off at the season, I was on to the chairman about getting access to games immediately after the game and when they're available, you know. So I was thinking, when we come back from an away game, if I have a 4G iPad where we can watch it and so on, that's how eager you are to see what's gone wrong or what's gone well, you know. But look, as soon as it's available, we're into it. It's not only myself, it's coaching staff, my two assistants with James Keddie and Dennis Hyland. We're onto it straight away, because we want to improve. And that's, as you say, football managers are mad. And when things don't go right, you want to have a look at it. When they go well, you want to have a look at it. But, you know, it's brutal when you get beaten for the feeling the next day. But all you can do is watch over. It's hard to watch over. It was difficult for me to watch over the Wexford game, because I knew, obviously, we were beaten, and it was hard to watch. But you have to do it to improve.
Yeah, and a warning for all the League of Ireland men out there who operate the cameras. I noticed something this week online, Gary, called a VO camera. Yeah. It costs €1,700 and it's basically, it goes up on a stick itself, it follows the ball itself, and it creates clips if the ball goes into the goal or near the goal and stuff. So maybe your camera might have to watch us back, although they are quite expensive. But as you said, the analysis side of things is growing and growing and growing. And for them to have a camera that can actually video the game without a person is amazing. Like.
Yeah, I've seen them in action. We've had them at our training ground, actually. And they are just, for me, I was looking at there's improvements to be made in relation to certain aspects of it, like, you know. But that's where it's going. I know Jared doing well in the head analyst for Mick McCarthy and the Ireland team. And I've done a pro license with Jared, so I've gone through a lot of analysis with him. And what's coming down the track is unreal. It really is, and you could be right. Yeah. There mightn't be a need for a person to be behind the camera anymore. You never know.
Yeah, I was saying last week I want a drone for the League of Ireland, and also those spider cams that you see in the Champions League that come right down to the fella taking the free kick. It would be amazing to see that in the league. But it could be a little bit of
wishful thinking. You can only dream.
Just speaking of that, Gary, like being a League of Ireland manager, whether it be First Division or Premier, and I know you've worked as an assistant for a long time as well, what is your week like as a League of Ireland manager? Because we mentioned the word obsession, and it really is. It's all you think about, millions of phone calls, sessions, games, and everything in between, really.
That's what it is. It's all, I mean, for me, and I'd say a lot of the coaches and managers as well, it's all about preparation, you know. You have to be ready for the next session, the next game, and so on. But you're constantly, as a manager now, it's different. Funny, I had a chat with Tony Cousins there during the week, and in relation to the difference between the assistant and the manager. And there was pressure on it. When I was his assistant for 7 years, I did feel pressure as a coach to perform and to put on the right sessions and so on. But ultimately, the overall responsibility falls on the manager's shoulders. And now I have that feeling, you know. You could imagine the feeling I had after back-to-back defeats with Athlone and Wexford. It was tough, and I sort of knew how the likes of Tony felt after defeats, you know. But look, you just have to get back on the horse when that happens, and you have to prepare again. You're back training. The main thing is you keep doing the right things and the things you believe in. And for me, it's players now, these days, they have to look after themselves. It's not just the manager and the staff that have to prepare. It's the players have to prepare their bodies properly. Food, sleep, rest, recovery. Obviously, the physical element of the game, the mental element of the game. And there's a lot that comes into it. And we've gone through a lot of that in our pre-season. There's a lot of detail that goes in to trying to put an 11 out on a Friday. And it's not easy.
Yeah, and we hear this debate all the time about League of Ireland part-time, League of Ireland full-time, teams that train in the daytime, teams that train in the evening time. And like, look at, you know, some of the clubs train as much as in the evening time as the ones in the morning, but they work and they have jobs and stuff. So how does your you know, the week work for the players in terms of how often you have them in relation to getting ready for a Friday?
Yeah, we train in the evenings, you know, and we try to get as many contact sessions as we can, while getting the balance right of rest and recovery, you know. I mean, you look at this week in the part-time, so-called part-time squad, but, you know, we're really professional the way we think about the game. You look at Friday, Monday, and Monday's extra time against Shamrock Rovers team, and then we go again, a big game against on Friday against Shells. That's 3 games in 7 days. So, in between, it's like, you've done a few club visits before over the UK, and I remember going back to Middlesbrough when Tony Mowbray was the manager and Mark Beanis was assistant. And their whole week just revolved around tactical play and recovery, because the Championship had
two games,
unbelievable amount of games. They always had a Tuesday or Wednesday game. And when you have 3 games in a week, you know, you look at the Premier schedules at the start of the season, when there's 3 games in a week, there's very, very, very little physical element of training taking part, you know.
Yeah, and you mentioned there going back to Middlesbrough, and you spent some time there as a kid, and you've played for a number of clubs here in the League of Ireland, for Pats, for Longford, obviously as well for Bray Wanderers. Working with those managers and also as an assistant, what type of things did you pick from all of your experiences as a footballer and as an assistant and a coach to shape you, the manager?
Yeah, that's could be a lot of things on that. Like, you know, you just have to draw on your experiences, I suppose. Like, you know, but I was lucky when I went into the coaching side of things. Like, you know, you draw on your experiences as a player. It's different as a coach and a manager. But I was very lucky to have 7 years with the one manager. Because it gave me a bit of consistency, it let me improve as it was at Longford Town, obviously under Tony Cousins, and it allowed me improve as a coach. And we had a great relationship, which I thought was, you know, it's essential, you know, on your management team to have a good relationship. And I done all my coaching badges throughout Longford Town, you know, right up to the pro license. And I was lucky because if Tony, let's say, had got the sack, or he was only there for a year, you know, generally the assistant may not be there, and I wasn't able to get that flow and that experience under my belt, you know. So I mean, to have that was unbelievable. And I suppose that's one of the main reasons why I am where I am today, you know.
Yeah, and then you've also just recently finished the UEFA Pro license through the FAI as well. And, you know, you go on lots of club visits, and there's also lots of guest speakers in from different backgrounds in different areas of football as well. Again, in what ways did the people you met and saw on that course and the different club visits, like even on our UEFA Youth Elite A license, we went over to Holland and we got to see PSV Eindhoven Academy and how they work and how they train and stuff. And you're picking up little bits of nuggets of info like all the time. And I'm sure the pro license is a step even more up.
How envious do we be when we see those setups? It's unreal, isn't it?
Correct. I went over to PSV, right, and they have football tennis pitches built, marked, made out of Astro, marked with different heights of nets and different lengths of courts that the kids, when they come in the morning, they go straight out and just play football tennis for half an hour. It's like unbelievable.
Just let me over here, isn't it? Yeah. We went on the pro license, we went over to visit a couple of UK clubs. We were at Bristol Rovers, and that was sort of a lower leagues, and to see how they work and how they operate within their resources. And then we went to Swansea when Paul Clement was the manager. He was a brilliant guest speaker. And, you know, he could tell his qualities as a coach. It was interesting to hear his experiences throughout Europe when he was the coach at PSG. He could coach in English everywhere, but you had to coach in French, and that was a big challenge for him when he was in PSG. You know, he had to do all his translations the night before. It's easy to go over to all the top clubs in Europe, but you have to relate it back to what you do here in Ireland, you know. So I suppose the Bristol Rovers trip was a really good one for us, and we actually went to Newport County, where Paul Gamble plays as well. And they're sort of nearer to our level that we have to deal with in League of Ireland, I know, with Bray anyway. But you can only aspire to get to where the other clubs are, but they're great to see and see how they work, because a lot of the basics are the same, you know. But look, come here, when I'd done the pro licence, you know, there was courses, there was assignments, there was a lot of stuff, as you well know, doing your Elite A, Jamie, but it's really the people that you learn off, you know, and the quality of colleagues that were there was excellent, you know, and some of the guest speakers were excellent as well. And Jim McGuinness was one who was really stood out for me when he came in, obviously doing so well in the Gaelic field, and he was over at Celtic at the time. He's on the current UEFA Pro license now at the moment. He has a burning ambition in football. I can see that in him. But some of the stuff that he went through and how he motivates and inspires players, I really took a lot from that. And it was good to see. Like, you know, you have to get out of your own bubble and your own comfort zone, thinking that you know everything yourself. You don't. There's a lot to be learned from other people.
Yeah, I think Jim was actually on Off the Ball recently on Skype from America, and just talking about exactly what you've spoken about there and the different aspects of what he wants to do as well. So you've worked with all these managers as a player and as an assistant. You've been on the pro license and the A license, and you've heard from all these guest speakers. You've done all these club visits. How do you then bring the bits that you like to Bray? And we've spoken about the difference between Swansea and Bristol, for example. Yeah. Bristol might be a lot more applicable to a Bray than a Swansea would be, because if we're honest, Bray or any League of Ireland club is never going to reach the standard of what Swansea would have
because
of the money. So you have to try and pick the bits that you think will help a Bray in the first division.
Yeah. Well, the first step for me is you got to work within your resources, you know. You have, obviously, whatever budget that your chairman sets out, and then it has to be realistic then. And you have to, from a playing and a football point of view, you sort of build your squad around that and what type of players that you want. So for me, when you're looking at it, is you have to start from the bottom. What do you have resources wise? How can you fit players in around that from a playing point of view? And it's all well and good having a preferred style of play and what you want to do, but you have to get that sort of quality player in, you know. So for me, it wasn't really down to the talent. It was down to the type of player that, when things aren't going well for us, that they're going to dig deep and stay together as a group, and they have the right values in that respect, you know. And I'm trying to build an actual squad there rather than a team of individuals, and I think that's essential, you know. The other thing for me is when you go in, you have to have your staff right and your management team right. If that's not right, it's not going to work from a football point of view. So you know, that stuff was important to me. But when I went into Bray, it was a little bit different in the sense that it wasn't like, you know, yeah, gun to your head, you have to, you know, get us promoted and win football match. Of course, that's what we want to do, you know, but there was a whole culture change that needed to happen at Bray. I think I don't need to go through what went there, but went on previous. There was an atmosphere change, a little bit of an identity change, and there was fans that haven't been at the club for the last 3 or 4 years. They needed to come back, we wanted them back, and I think from that point of view, that's been really successful. You know, there's a lot of off the pitch stuff going on down at Bray, and that's credit to obviously the chairman and the people that run the club, the volunteers that are in the club as well. I think it's been unreal. And if you were down at Rovers there the other night, the feel good factors back in the atmosphere around the ground is absolutely fantastic, and obviously my job is to put a decent show on the pitch.
Yeah, and you've spoken as well about, you know, how you signed your squad and the type of players that you signed and them fitting into your style. How in-depth you go into the person that you're signing and if he's the right person. Like, we spoke to yourself and Paul Keegan the day of the launch in the Aviva, and like, I'm sure he's been a massive person for you, not just as a player, but as a leader and almost like a coach on the pitch, because it is a young squad. You've got the likes of him and, you know, Gabriel Sava, Huey Douglas and a couple of other senior ones, but lots of younger ones. Mm. So I'm sure you had to try and select the characters that you wanted. Yes, he's a good footballer, but is he going to be able to fit into the way I want my players to behave and stuff like that?
Well, that's it. Like, you know, you have to have your standards within the group and so on. But what I found from last year, it was difficult last year. There were some really good characters last year when I took over. But it wasn't my squad, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the personalities weren't the type of personalities that I would have wanted to have in the group, you know. And so I needed to change that. And to do that, I realised it was a great learning experience for me last year. I couldn't do it on my own, you know. You can't do it you need players within to be behind you as the manager, and obviously influencing the younger players that are in the group. And listen, I fought tooth and nail, obviously, to sign Paul Keegan. There would have been five or six clubs wanted to sign Paul. So he was massive for me, and to get Gabby Sava with his experience up in Dundalk was great. But you have Gabby and Paul, and Huey Douglas obviously has a few years' experience under his belt. He was only 25, and he seems like he's around for 10 years, like, you know. But those three lads are the experienced lads that are in the group. And I don't know if you've seen, you know, the tweet that Dan put up last week, that, you know, 23 and below is the rest of the squad, age-wise, you know. So there's massive potential in our group. But we have to keep them. When things are going well, we have to keep their feet on the ground. When things are going against us, we have to make sure that their heads are up and we just move on to the next challenge, you know. And, you know, the group have a lot to offer, and we've done really well so far for me.
And this sounds like a strange thing to say, almost like a contradiction, but probably getting relegated has seen the club reborn. And I know you coming in and Niall O'Driscoll coming in and, you know, other things too as well, but just people want to come and watch a team that's winning and that has a chance to compete, and that has been the case, to go down and hopefully bounce back this year, next year or whenever it might be.
Yeah, I think sometimes taking a step backwards to go too forward is what's needed, you know. And it was probably pretty inevitable by halfway during last season what was going to happen with Bray Wanderers. And I had a good long chat with Tommy Barrett a couple of times since we played Limerick, and it was probably the best thing to happen to Limerick as well, like, you know, to sort of go back and let's rebuild and build something again, you know, because you had to go from scratch. But look, come here, that didn't mean, Jamie, that come the end of the season when the relegation was confirmed, that it didn't hurt the players that were in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Even me being part of it for the 9 games, it's not a nice feeling, you know. There's a lot of doom and gloom, heads are down. But look, come here, I think overall it was the best thing for the club to happen. Listen, to go down, let's start afresh, let's make the change we need to make and look forward.
So league table, Bray Wanderers, 6 games played, 12 points, top of the table. Shelburne, Friday's opposition, are in 6th, but they're only 3 points behind on 9 points after 6 games as well. And you face them this Friday, and there's so many games in this league with yourselves, Longford, Drogheda, Bray, you are Bray, of course, Shells, and others where you're going. God, these are big games.
Yeah, well, look, come here, listen, after, like we said, like we mentioned earlier, after Athlone and Wexford, for us, every game is a big game. The league game is priority for most people, like, you know what I mean? But look, come here, you mentioned a couple of sides there. Our next few run of games, Shells, Longford, Drogheda, and then we're back at Cabinteely, and Cabinteely are flying as well.
Yeah.
And you look at Limerick, since we played them at the start, they're back up in the top few spots as well. You won't see it, Jamie, until it gets to the halfway point of the league, what teams are starting to break away, and hopefully we're in the running to do that, you know. But look, the Shells game of Friday is our priority and our next focus, and hopefully if we turn up, we can get something out again.
Yeah, as Gary mentioned, Longford and Drogheda in the next 2 games as well, and, you know, they're important ones. But I suppose, with the way things have started, there just has to be a belief among the group and among you and the other stuff that's going on with the club, that you can try to continue the positive stuff, win the league, great, but 100% try and make those playoffs and you know, have the club in a position where you're competing right towards the end, which improves the crowds and everything else around it. Would be great to, you know, to keep that run going as such.
That's our aim, you know. You just look to the next game and try to keep it going, Jamie. But look, at the start of it, it's not the pressure of you must win the league. But as players and as football people, and you've been in coaching as well, anytime you go to play a game of football, you want to win it, you know. So we put ourselves under that type of pressure to try and win a game of football, and ultimately means that we want to try and win the league, you know. But it's going to be a massive challenge. Longford will have the same thoughts. Shells will have the same thoughts. They'll put them together, I'm sure. Cavan Tealy are sneaking under the radar. And like I said, Tommy's back up there. But it's early doors. Anyone can put a run together of six wins and be right up there. That's how tight that league will be. So, yeah, we'll have our, you know, we'll have our own ambitions and so on. But you're right. You know, if it's not the league, you know, you want to be making the playoffs.
Great stuff. That's the Bray manager, Gary Cronin. Gary, thanks a million for coming in.
Brilliant.
Really interesting stuff. Best of luck on Friday. Enjoy thanks. The video analysis and we'll speak to you soon.
Oh, I can't wait to get to it. Thanks, Jamie. Cheers.
The best League of Ireland podcast in the business. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store. This is Off the Ball.
Hey, it's JB Moore here. You're on the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast from Marconi House in Dublin. And we're very happy to welcome James Finnerty from Bohemian to studio. James, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Jamie. Thank you. Thanks for having me in. Thanks for having me in.
Firstly, a well-deserved rest on Monday, a League Cup win over Cavan Tealy, but you've started every league game so far, so you had a little rest?
Yeah, it's been a good start. I've been enjoying my time back home at Bowes. It's a good start to the season. We had there was a strong squad playing against Cavan Tealy. We had a good win to progress to the quarterfinals of the EA Sports Cup, so... Yeah, it's been a good start and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, for you, having played every game and it's kind of your first real experience of senior football, was it nice not to have to play on Monday with a big game coming up this Friday and a massive game obviously against Pats last Friday too?
Yeah, it was nice. I was actually struggling with a bit of a hip injury Monday, like I didn't train with the lads. So it was great to have the rest, extra day recovery with the big game against Sligo on Saturday and after such a good win against Pats on a Friday night. So... it was good.
How have you found your League of Ireland experience overall so far? You signed for Bowes, obviously coming home from the UK around Christmas time, and you've been in the team and the team's been doing well, but how have you found it personally?
Yeah, I found it at the start with pre-season and that it was just tough to readjust or whatever, but I felt during pre-season getting the games under my belt and then starting the league, getting a run of games, I've been feeling comfortable and all the lads have been great welcoming me into the team. That's why it's been a great start. The mood in the camp's been very good and we're looking forward to the tough games coming up.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, given you've been in the UK with Aston Villa and at Rochdale, kind of underage and not played too much men's football, to actually have been put straight in the team and have played every game, that must be a massive boost to you, like.
Yeah, it is a massive confidence boost. The trust that Keith Long's put in me, and I feel that I've been doing well in the team and I'm very happy to be playing every game of that, and hopefully I can keep it up. And especially, yeah, when I was in Rochdale, I wasn't really getting much of a look in with the first team. It was frustrating. And then I feel like, obviously, I wasn't playing men's football. It was just 23s and with the U team. So, yeah, I'm very happy to be playing now.
What are the main adaptations you've had to make from being like an academy footballer to playing senior games and games that matter? Like, that's often a criticism in England, that 23s and 18s, there's nothing kind of on them. Whereas here, as you've seen, the crowds and the passion people have for this league.
Yeah, it's a lot different than over in England. Obviously, I would have played in Villa for 3 years and you'd be going out playing, it wouldn't mean as much, like you'd be more or less going out to play, like pass the ball. It wouldn't really matter if you won or not, but with these games now at Bowes, they're very good. Like, you have 3,000 plus fans at every game, like nearly. The fans have been unbelievable. That's just a lot more competitive and it's a lot better for me, I think, yeah.
How have you enjoyed the crowds? And we had a debate recently on this podcast about crowds being up, and Matt Devaney from Bowes was on about trying to get more people into Dalymount if it's possible with the arrangements with the stands, because every game has been sold out for you guys, and for you again playing in front of proper crowds for the first time, how has that been?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. Like, the crowd, I think even the Finn Harps game was sold out. Like, I think nearly every game has been sold out. The fans have been unbelievable, even away down at Cork, away at UCD, they're unbelievable. So it's different for me. Like, obviously when I was in England and playing 23s, you'd be playing in front of 200-300 fans like every game, but the atmosphere so far from the fans has been unbelievable. They're like an extra man for us. It's motivates you going out playing in front of a sellout. Like, it's very good.
Will you tell whoever Snapchat knew that you're on a podcast, please? James Finnerty's phoning one. You can turn it on silent there for us. Yeah, you're on the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. It's Jamie Moore here with James Finnerty from Bowes, who's played in every game so far for Bowes, and they've had a really good start to the season as well, including two derby wins at home against, we see there in action against Cork City, but two derby wins at home against Rovers and against Pats in front of huge crowds too. Like, you couldn't wish for more in terms of being a Bowes player and winning those derbies, and especially with the home crowd, the main stand there full, and the away stand behind the goal full, but 900 as well. So it's a real, on that side of the pitch, certainly like a cauldron to play in, and to win those two derbies has been great.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. The two derbies, obviously the first game against Rovers was a great result. That was my first taste of the Dublin derby, and I enjoyed it a lot. It was a great game to play in. Obviously, when I signed, like, they were the games you'd look forward to, and like the lads in the change room were all on about it. Like, and it was great to get the win in it. And obviously with the Pats game as well, it was another tough game, and it was a good result. Two clean sheets from them games, so, and then two wins, so that's all you can really ask for. Like, it's been a good start.
Yeah, speaking of the clean sheets, you played beside Rob Cornwall, who's done really well this season, and James Talbot, I think, has the most clean sheets of any goalkeeper in the league so far. How has that been, and the fact that you and James are new, the influence that Rob has had, who, like, is in his mid-20s but is an experienced player, and you can even see when you're playing with him, like, he just talks through the whole game, which I'm sure has been a big help to you and James behind you.
Yeah, definitely. Rob has helped me a lot. He's a very good player. He's a leader. Like, he's great to play with. He's always at me, always talking to me. If I make a mistake or whatever, he's always just, don't worry about it, like, get the next. Like, he's really good to play with. Then James has come in and has been unbelievable as well. He's a lot of talking as well from him, that he helps a lot. So, yeah, it's just been, I've been enjoying playing alongside him. Even the back five, Dara and Detzer, it's a strong, decent, good back five. Like, so we haven't been leaking much goals. Don't think we've conceded from open play yet. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and like from that point of view as well, being a younger player to have, and I think, have you been playing left centre back?
Left centre back, yeah.
But you're right footed.
Yeah, right footed. Yeah.
Did I hear you prefer left centre back, even though you were right footed, or because?
No, I probably would prefer right centre back. Even though when I was at Belvo for the 6 years, I would have normally played left centre back. But over in Villa, I would have preferred playing right centre back, or with Ireland down through the years, I would have preferred right centre back.
Yeah, because it's interesting that you at left centre back and Leahy at left back, who's a young player but has done really well, and then the two more senior ones, Rob and Detzer, are on the other side of you, but there's still been like a really good connection between that back four, and James behind you, and maybe Keith Buckley sitting in front of you, another experienced one as well.
Yeah, Keith Bucko was a very good player, very experienced player. He's another player that's been very good to me. Like, he'd be talking to me a lot about the league, and before games he'd be talking to me about the strikers and everything, so he's been very helpful as well. But yeah, me and Dara have been playing beside each other. Obviously, you were saying we're young, but both of us, we've been doing well. We feel like we're doing well in that, yeah.
Bucko is also mad. Keith Buckley is mad.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a real, like, close connection with the Bowes group. And again, it's an adults' men's change room to be in. What's that been like, and being around the likes of Bucko? Keith Ward's another messer, but a great lad. Derek Pender is captain, and, you know, there's some other older ones combined with some younger players that are just come to the club, but there seems to already be a connection made, and I'm sure that the messers in the group kind of helped that.
Yeah, the change room has been great ever since I've come into it. They've all helped me gel in, and the banter is very good, to be fair. It'd be obviously different to when I was in Villa with lads my own age, so it's different. You're in with more senior players and that, but it would have been similar to my time over in Rochelle. But yeah, the lads, the banter and that is very good, that there's a good atmosphere in the change room at the minute. Hopefully we can keep it going with the results and that, but the attitude at the minute is very good, and the confidence among the players is very good.
Has there been many pranks played on you yet, or have you been spared?
Nah, not really, not yet, no.
Okay, well, I can guarantee you, knowing those people, there's one coming, so
yeah,
you better watch your back. Just going back to the games against Rovers and Pats, and mainly the Rovers one, because that was the first one, and that is the derby that Bowes and Rovers look out for. How did it compare to what you expected it to be and what you kind of knew about it? Because when lads go to England, if we're honest, you know, you focus on England and you're looking at England. I'm not sure how often you would watch League of Ireland games or see League of Ireland games, but just what you expected from it in comparison to what it was.
Yeah, well, obviously, coming back, signing with Bowes, I would have knew, like, the Rovers game was the most important, like a massive derby. And playing in it was a lot different than I really would have expected. Like, the first 10, 15 minutes, like, was very, 100%. There was a lot of tackles being made, like a lot of just direct balls, and that was, the pace was very quick, and it wasn't something I was really expecting. But obviously before the game I was told by the lads and Keith Long, like, just to be expecting it to be like helter skelter and that, so it was a good game to play in, yeah.
And when we add in the crowd too, and how passionate like the fans are in those games too, how do you try and use that to help you? I was speaking to someone yesterday about you know, a crowd, and if they've been in, you know, in a really good position and the crowd are roaring, if it influences what they do. And again, because you wouldn't have played in front of too many crowds, how, when you're playing in such a helter-skelter game, and like there has been red cards and stuff like that in those games just because the crowd is hoping someone flies into a tackle that they shouldn't, for example?
Yeah, you would be like fully focused in the game, but obviously the crowd being there, and that would be an extra motivator. Like, we're playing in front of a sold out stadium, and obviously the away section being sold out as well, that you would be like pretty much fully focused in the game, but like it's great to be playing in that atmosphere and the crowds, so...
And you've also had the chance to celebrate a goal at Daly Mount. For anyone who didn't see it, remind us of it and your celebration.
Yeah, it was just, we were down 1-0 to Derry at the time, and I think there was about 20, 15 minutes left. And normally I'd just go back, like it was a corner, but like we still had possession, like it was cleared, and I'd normally just go back to centre half. But I said I'd stay up, like, and Keith Ward had the ball and just crossed into the box, and it just fell to me right place, right time, and got my foot onto it, lucky enough. And yeah, I think the celebration needs a bit of improvement, to be honest with you.
You finished the ball like your main striker, Mr. Dinny Corkin, would finish. It was a great finish for a centre-back, like, swept it in right-footed. I saw it on live scores, like, it's definitely a header, but it actually wasn't.
Yeah, no, it was a decent enough finish. The lads, some of the lads thought it was a toe poke, but no, it wasn't. It was the outside of the right foot. But looking back and on telly, I was, like, at the time, I was thinking, like, I was nearly going to take a touch on that because I thought I had a lot of time. But looking back on telly, like, there was two lads, like, right behind me, so... Yeah, I was lucky.
And is a James Finnerty goal something quite rare? And if so, you need to work on those celebrations.
I wouldn't know about rare. Like, I would have, down through the years with Belva, I would have scored a few goals or whatever, and at Villa. But yeah, definitely the celebrations would need a good bit of working on. Yeah.
What age are you?
I've just turned 20 there last month.
Okay, so tell us about your path to being at Bowes, playing football as a kid, going to Belva, Villa, Rochdale, and now to Bowes. I'm always interested in the stories of people, like the fact that you're only 20, you have had a lot of experience at all these different levels so far. So bring us back to when you first started.
Yeah,
in Screen of all places.
Yeah.
Well, Mead,
yeah. Okay. I would have started playing the Gaelic since I was about 5-6, and didn't get involved to the soccer till about 8. I was playing with Screen Tower, like the local club. We only played Friday nights, like for half an hour in an Avon in the MDL league, like, and then that was under 8. So then under 9, I actually was playing for two teams. I was playing for Screen Tower and I was playing for Rathaw Harps in the NDSL.
Okay.
Because Rathaw Harps wouldn't play till Sunday, so I was playing with Screen Tower, but we'd only play on a Saturday morning for like half an hour, and I played with Rathaw Harps on a Sunday in the NDSL league, as well as training once a week with Rathaw. And then I was actually, we went under 10 with Screen Tower. We were playing in the Kells Blackwater tournament, and I think we were playing Home Farm in like the quarter final. And after that game, the Belvo coach Simon came across and was chatting to my dad or whatever, and he said he'd like to see me come up training. So went up training, and like the Monday up to Belvo in Fairview, and just immediately they offered me to sign, like, so I was delighted. And I was at Belva for 6 years and loved every minute of it. Like, made a lot of friends, had a very good team there. The last, very unlucky not to win out in there, but like I loved 6 years there. I made some really good friends there.
Yeah, so you were at Belva and, you know, they were one of the top schoolboy clubs. You're an international, you're doing really well at club level, you're playing for your country, and then scouts start coming to games and the opportunities for trials start to come. What age were you then, and what was that period like, you know, going from a kid playing football to realising, God, I actually might have a chance here to go away?
Yeah, it was something, it was a bit mad really, like, say, when I first went up to Belva for the first 2 years, like, it was really just to focus, like, I used to play right wing, like, for the first 2 years.
And I never knew that, but now I do.
Yeah, right mid or centre mid, but I used to, like, just my main aim was to get in the team, really, because obviously we had a decent enough side, and I wasn't really thinking about, and then I got under 13 came and I got called up to the DDSL, so that's when you're kind of really thinking, do you know what I mean, because I had to kind of give up the Gaelic around that time just to focus on the soccer or whatever. But yeah, once I got on the DDSL and the Kendi Cup squads, then trials and that started to come. And then I think I was 13 or 14 when I think went on trials to a few clubs and that, and then got selected for Ireland at 16s levels, under 16, and just before that I was went on trial to Villa for the first time, and they were obviously fairly keen, and Yeah, I was signed there when I was 15.
So what are you thinking at that stage when you're going on the trials and you think the trials have gone well and you know there's like real interest there, but you're in school and you're considering moving away and you've got lots of other stuff going on in your life as a young person, you know, along with this major opportunity in the football?
Yeah, well, when I was younger, obviously, I wasn't really focused on the school. Like, once I kind of got on the County Cup squad, I was always thinking, like, I might have a chance to get away or, like, do you know what I mean? So I was really just focused on the football. And once Villa had the offer, like, there was a few other clubs that were interested in me and wanted me going on trial and that. But once Villa kind of offered me the deal, like, I couldn't really turn it down. It was a decent offer and it's something I always wanted to do, like go over to England and play football, so I couldn't turn it down.
So you moved there in July 2015, would that be right?
2015, yeah.
Okay, so we're now obviously in 2019. You were there for 3 years and spent a little bit of time at Rochdale. How would you describe overall the English football experience for a 16-year-old Irish kid between then and when you came back?
Obviously, I've nothing bad to say about my time at Villa. I loved it. Made some friends for life there that I'd still chat to today. It's a very good club. Like, the facilities there, like going and training there every morning was something that I really enjoyed. Then obviously getting the setback of being like not offered a new deal there was a bit disappointing. But then moving to Rochdale, I never really settled there. Probably after a month there, I kind of knew that I didn't want to stay, that I was unhappy. I wasn't really playing. I wanted to come home, like, so. Like, even going to training and that, I didn't enjoy. Like, I couldn't, like, when we were warming up for training, like, I couldn't wait to training to be over and that. I didn't enjoy, like, my time there, really. So I was just delighted, like, to come home with that. And when Keith Long got in touch with me, like, I couldn't, like, refused to play. Like, it was a good offer and something I was really happy to do, to move home and play with Bowes.
Yeah, and so far, thank God, it's worked out. Saw a piece yesterday with Ryan Burke, who's at Birmingham, on the St. Pat's social media, and he's just been offered a 2-year pro contract at the end of his first contract as such, and he's in, you know, the category of a minority of Irish lads who do get the opportunity to stay after their kind of first contract of 2 or 3 years is over, and you'd be in the other category of the 90% or more that unfortunately weren't offered something. Like, what's that like when you've chased this dream for so long, you've achieved the first part of going away, you feel you're doing well, you're playing in unbelievable stadiums every week and, you know, at a top club, and then you're told, well, we actually don't want to keep you?
Yeah, I was actually told the time I was away with the Irish 19s, we had the elite phase out in Portugal, and I was actually told out there that I'd been released, like, not gotten a new deal, and at the time, I wasn't really, like, too disappointed or whatever, but it was just really, do you know what I mean, a few weeks later that, like, your mates that you've been training with every single day and very good mates, you won't really be seeing much of them again. That was really the main thing, just missing all the lads, like, they've a great bunch, like, I was spent, like, nearly the whole 3 years with, like, every day, so that was really the main thing. Like, obviously, I knew, like, another club or, like, it wouldn't have been the end, like, another club or whatever would have been came looking, or but it was just really, like, disappointed, like, with the lads, like, had a great time there with the boys, and that was just really, like, that was really the main thing. Like,
yeah, so you moved to Rochdale and then you decide you're coming home. How was the process of making that choice, and now that you've been home for probably 4 months or so, do you feel it was the right decision?
Yeah, I've no doubt it was the right decision. That I was just happy that I made it. Russia, like, just never really settled. Didn't really want it to work out, to be honest with you. Like, as soon as I was there, like, in training, like, I wasn't really, do you know what I mean? I wasn't enjoying training and that, and wasn't enjoying my time there. So, I'm just really happy to be home now and playing at Bowes.
So what's life like away from the football? What are you doing with yourself? Because you were used to being kind of a morning footballer as such full time, and even though Bowes train as often as Pats and Rovers and Cork and Dundalk, it's in the evening, so you do have some time in the daytime to kill.
Yeah, that's the main thing, to readjust, just that I've been training in the morning for the last nearly 4 years, that it's different training back at night time. But during the day, like, I was doing a bit of work, but I'm not working at the moment, so I'm just really in the gym a bit or doing whatever, like, to pass the time. And then obviously we'll train at the evening times in up in Blanche, which is handy. It's only like 15 minutes from the house, so yeah, I'm enjoying it.
And so you're footballing in the evenings and you had a job that you're not doing anymore as well, and like everybody speaks about England and the education and how good or bad it is, and coming back and trying to go to college or trying to do this, and of course you left without a leaving cert. So like, what's your thought process been about what to do? I'm sure you have an ambition to play full-time football here too, but you do have to have a plan, I'm sure, as well to fill your time, get an education, get a job and do something as well as the football.
Yeah, obviously I don't have the leaving cert as I left when I was just gone 16 or whatever, but there was a FOSS course that I was interested in doing, or there was an apprenticeship electrician that I was thinking of doing as well, so there's other options. So I'm not really too worried about the I'm still only 20, so like I'm not really too worried about the education at the minute. I still have, like, do you know what I mean? I'm just really concentrating on the football and see what happens, like.
So lastly, on the football, Sligo away on Saturday down the showgrounds. Have you been there before?
I wasn't at the stadium. I went down to my brother's game. They were playing at the Astro beside the showgrounds, but I haven't been in the showgrounds. I've heard it's a nice stadium, but no, I've never been down.
Yeah, so every stadium you go to is kind of a new place to be as well, which is something I'm sure, you know, quite interesting and quite unique. Sligo have had a difficult start to the season. They're a passing team. It should be a good crowd there. They've had a good crowd so far. So what do you expect from the game? And I think Bow is third at the moment, so to try and continue to build and pick more points up.
Yeah, I've seen, actually, they've had a decent amount of support. I think they've about 3,000 at most of their games. But yeah, it'll be a tough place to go. I've seen Pat's just got a late goal there or whatever, but it'll be a tough place to go. There'll be a good physical team, a few decent players. But obviously, as you said, we're up there, we're third. There's no reason why we can't keep the run going and stay where we are. So,
yeah, I suppose 9 games in, I'm just finding the league table here. Like, you know, when does it become more than just a good start? You know what I mean? Like, you're 9 games in now at the moment. Sorry, 7 games in. Shamrock Groves have played 9, 14 points, so you're third. Like, when does it become more than a good start and you go, do you know what, we've actually got a chance here to really do something this season? Or has that kind of thought process happened already?
We've just really taken it game by game. Like, but we're up in the loop for Europe, so like, I don't really see why we should be expecting to drop off. Like, we've been playing well. If you look at some of the results, the teams we've beaten, so I don't really see a reason why you'd be looking. It's been a good start, like, but 7 games in, it's, do you know what I mean? It's not like 2-3 games, it's 7 games and we're still up there, so I don't really see a reason why we should be dropping off. Like, we're playing as well as most teams in the league, I think, so I don't see a reason why we should be looking at to drop off. I think we should, like, we're taking every game as it comes, and the confidence in the change room and like the squad we've got, like strength and depth, it's very good. Like, so yeah, I don't really see a reason why we should be dropping off.
The Bows fans will love that.
Yeah.
Game Finery, thanks a million. Best of luck.
Cheers, Jay. Thank you. Off the Bulls League of Ireland podcast. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting
available in the App Store and Google Play Store. You're very welcome to the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast with Jamie Moore. Very happy to welcome Finn Harps defender Dan O'Reilly to the studio. And for the second week in a row, we have a man who's actually in the studio for the second time after Neil Ferrugia last week. So Dan, you should be very honoured, or should we be honoured to have you again?
I'm blessed to be in your presence, Jamie.
Oh, yes. Great. Thank you very much. Dan, of course, just signed for Finn Harps in the off-season, having been with Longford for the previous 3 years?
Yeah, 3 years.
And Bray before that,
yeah.
And Fulham before that?
Yeah, a couple of stints at lower league clubs, but yeah.
And in the First Division team of the year, 2 years in a row?
Yeah.
Nice, okay. So, tell us about your time at Finn Harps so far and why you decided to leave Longford and join Harps.
Well, the main attraction was Premier Division football, obviously. Like, the option was to stay with Longford, but I just thought, while I'm young, 23, that I wouldn't get much of a chance to travel like something like Finn Harps, you know, whereas my work allows me to do that. And playing in the Premier Division was something that I wanted to do, whether that was with Longford through the playoffs last year or whether this year with Finn Harps, obviously. So that was my main reasoning. And I met Ollie in the off-season. I liked what he had to say, and he's a very passionate man, and I thought it would be very good to work under someone like him.
Yeah, talk to me about Ollie Horgan, the manager, because, like, outwardly he's, you know, quite loud on the sideline and sent off quite a bit and banned quite a bit and whatever, but, like, I've spoken to him on the podcast, like, numerous times, and, like, he's such a nice man, and I understand that he's so good in the dressing room with the tactics board and with, you know, information on the other teams. But what's he actually like to play for?
Well, firstly, he's a gentleman. Like, he comes across completely different. Like, as an opposition player, when you see Ollie, you think, oh, he's mad as a brush. But when you're actually working under him, he's very understanding whether you have a problem off the pitch or whether you want to talk about something on the pitch. Like, he's a gentleman. And then obviously when it comes to games, obviously your emotions can carry you through, and he might let them get a better of him. But he's just very passionate, and he obviously wants to win. Same with Paul Hegarty on the sideline. So two of them can be a bit mad, but they're great fellas, like, and I'm really enjoying working under them.
What did Ollie say to you to make you want to join, apart from the obvious, which is the opportunity to play in the Premier?
Well, at the start, when I met him first, I was quite sceptical about going up, obviously, to travel and stuff like that. But just like the way he talked, he was very positive, and he wanted to go about his business quietly. He had done a lot of homework on me and other players we spoke about when I met him, and I liked that, because from previous times, like, managers might just hear about you or whatever, but he knows a lot, going back to even schoolboy days. So that was very positive for me, like, and then it was a lot for me to think about, and that obviously lured me towards Finn Harps in the end.
So 9 league games played, just 2 points, draws against Dundalk and Pats, but Dan wasn't playing on Monday in the League Cup, and Harps win their first game of the season, beating Sligo 2-1 after extra time, so you may not be needed.
I'm a bad luck curse by the sounds of it, yes. No, but we've actually played well in a lot of games, but just a bit of luck hasn't gone our way. We've scored 3 against Cork at home, and we're unlucky against Rovers a couple of weeks ago, so hopefully that's a sign of things to come. The lads winning on Monday, and we can push on, please God.
Is it possible for us to see that photo again for a second, please? Dan, there you go, look to your left there. Why do people close their eyes when they head the ball? It's something that I've always been interested in, because it's subconscious, it's not something you do on purpose, but you're clearly winning that header, but the eyes are firmly closed there in Tala, I think that is.
Yeah, it's in Tala. Yeah, I don't know, really. Like, it's probably last minute that the eyes close, but obviously you're focusing the ball right till the end, but when the cameramen or women catch it, and obviously it's not great luck, is it?
Yeah, for those who are listening to the podcast, it's Dan in the luminous yellow Harps kit winning a header for Harps against Rovers a few weeks ago in Tala. So it's been a tough start to the league. Those two draws against two good teams. How would you kind of reflect on the start? And, you know, I suppose you're not far away from UCD, just above you, and even Sligo a little bit ahead, but it's not been a great start.
No, well, we're very disappointed with the two games against Sligo and UCD. They're probably our poorest performances, and like, they're obviously the two teams ahead of us, and we would have went into them games with high hopes, especially at home to Sligo and even away to UCD, and we're very disappointed because we thought we could have got a win against Sligo at home and maybe a win or a draw against UCD. But overall, like, there's certain games, like away to Rovers and stuff like that, you're going in, it's kind of a free shot. Like, but we've played well, obviously, against Pats and Dundalk. We got the draws, and we were quite happy with that after 3 games, having lost the Bows in the first day. But, yeah, we're hoping we can just push on now, especially after winning the Cup on Monday. And it's the last game of the first round of fixtures on Friday, so hopefully we can get a result against Derry.
Yeah, this question over 2 parts. One, being in the Premier Division against teams that are of a better standard to the First Division, and 2, being in a team that struggles, what sort of challenges has that presented you as a defender? And I'm sure some of that are the reasons why you've decided to give this a go.
Personally, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as a defender, you're obviously always going to be busy when you're against better players and when you're kind of the underdog, I suppose, as we are, Finn Harps, going into most of the games. Like, but it's a good opportunity to show if you are a good defender and obviously stand out, like, even if you're losing games, or you just have to focus on yourself and try to get a good performance. But if the other players are playing well around you, then obviously you're going to get results, you know. Then playing against better players, obviously the Premier Division is higher than the First Division, so that was what really I wanted to test myself against, having played in the First Division the last 2 years. I really want to see where I was at as a player, because obviously I've done quite well the last 2 years, so I wanted to see where I was personally and against better players, better strikers, wingers now. So I'm really enjoying it so far. So
yeah, you said strikers and wingers now, because you've played a little bit at left back, and I'll drop my pen. Sometimes 3 at the back. Have you played 3 at the back yet?
Yeah, we've played. Ollie's quite fond of the 3.
Yeah.
I've played left of the 3, and I've also played left wing back as well, which is something new to me, but I've actually enjoyed it, to be honest. I was quite sceptical at the start, but I'm enjoying it out there. So it's a lot of freedom, and obviously you're going to be against good wingers and stuff. So defensively and attacking, I'm learning a lot and constantly learning all the time.
You're also doing lots of travel all the time, Dan. How have you found basically living in Dublin and having to be in Donegal 3 or 4 times a week?
Well, it's actually only really twice a week. Depends on if we have a game on a Monday, then I'll have to go up on a Sunday, but it's normally on a Monday and Thursday, so it's not too bad. And then home games, I'd stay up on a Thursday night, so I look forward to that sleep on a Thursday.
I'm sure you do. So how does your week work? Because Ollie has been quite understanding that he doesn't want you up there all the time. He knows you'll do your own recovery and at times maybe go for a run or hit the gym, that you're not needed for all the sessions, which would be probably like very difficult for you to do from a logistical point of view.
Yeah, well, the lads, the week is Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, game Friday, and then the option of recovery on a Saturday. So on a Tuesday, I wouldn't go up. The two main sessions would be a Monday and a Thursday. So obviously the pre-match session is important for shape and looking at the other team from that aspect, and then Monday you get a good blowout. So Ollie's quite understanding with that, and then my work has obviously worked around it as well. So I just said this year was the only really year that I could do something like that, and I really wanted to play in the Premier Division, so it's kind of worked out well for me in that sense.
So how long is the drive, and what do you do? Are you a podcast listener, or do you make phone calls, do you go up with someone else? How do you like pass the time, because doing that twice a week, you know, up and back, I'm sure it can be a bit tedious at times.
Yeah, well, if you're on your own, especially, like, to be honest, I don't mind being on my own, like having my own independence and just putting on a podcast or an audiobook or whatever.
This podcast, obviously.
Yeah, this podcast, yeah, and others. No, but most of the time I go up when the coach is Willie O'Connor, and then Sean Boyd, who's on loan from Shamrock Rovers, will come up as well. So we kind of chop and change the drive, so sometimes it's nice to kick back and relax, and then obviously other times you're driving, so it's actually not too bad. Like, on paper it's quite daunting, but after you've done it a few times, it's not too bad at all.
How long is it each way?
From my house, probably about 3 hours 15 minutes, pedal to the metal.
Right, God. It's like, the trip home after the Monday session, or the Thursday session if you're playing in Dublin, you're able to meet at the ground or at the hotel at 6 o'clock, yeah, or 4 o'clock, whatever, on the Friday, so you don't have to go back up. But like, having trained, like, it's training at 6, 7?
7 o'clock, yeah, Monday and Thursday, yeah.
So you're probably back in the car just after 9, 9:15 maybe, by the time you've...
9, yeah, quick shower and out we go, yeah.
Like, is that... I just, in my own head, thinking you've trained, you've done the drive up, you've trained, you've eaten, whatever, and you're back on down the road and it's pitch dark and it's like, God, I've got 3 hours to go here. Like, you've just basically done it, just got on with it.
Yeah, at the start it was kind of something I was a bit anxious about, but after a while, like, I'd nearly always be home before 12 in bed, so it just depends on obviously my next day schedule, and obviously recovery is even more of an emphasis this year compared to last year with sleep and rest and like changing how I'm training and stuff, like just to adapt to just the travelling, never mind the training and the actual playing games. It's more so the travelling and like my joints and muscles. It's different than what I've been used to before, but I'm actually adapting quite well and I'm enjoying this kind of change in career, I suppose.
And on a Thursday, if it's a home game, you're staying at the Jackson's Hotel, is it, in
Valley
Buffet?
Yeah, Valley Buffet, yeah.
So you've got just sleep and on the Friday just have a coffee, relax and prepare, which I'm sure is, you know, a good plus. You don't have to go back down the road and then back up again on the Friday.
Yeah, it's nice because you go up on a Thursday and then you come back on a Friday, so it doesn't really feel like you're up and back. And my dad would go up to a lot of the home games, so I'd normally get a lift on a Thursday and then come back with him on the Friday, so I'd get near full then on the way home, whether I've done well or not. So it's grand, it's fine. I like I said to you before, I look forward to the sleep and I can relax and get some food into me and just chill out, like.
And that's something that footballers face all the time, is the parents or the girlfriends or whatever it might be giving them their opinion on the game. So you've played for Finn Harps, you've won the game 6-0, it's great. You've lost the game, you've conceded an own goal, you've given away a penalty. What does your dad say to you when you get into the car? Do you just say, "Dad, I'm not talking about it, shut up"?
Well, I'm all ears, to be honest. Like, last week we lost to Waterford 4-0, like, and got in the car, whatever, had a chat, and he was just telling me what I did wrong and what I did well, really, and I never really argue. I'm always open to criticism. Obviously, some of it is in certain times is hard to hear, but most of the time it's just to improve you as a player, like, you know. So it's part and parcel of the game, like, you know.
Yeah, and one of your mates, Sam Verdon, signed, did pre-season, played the first game against Bowes and then left and has joined Longford, and I know he to travel, and it was quite difficult for him with work and his personal life too. So it doesn't work for everybody, but for you, so far it has, and for Sam, he's made the decision. I saw him play for Longford the other night, he was really good. He had to decide that he couldn't do it.
Yeah, me and Sam aren't mates anymore. No, obviously Sam has his own reasons, and I get on really well with Sam, so it was more so a personal choice for Sam, but I've adapted quite well so far, but obviously it's only quarter of the way through, really, games-wise, but I'm enjoying it, yeah.
And tell us about your life away from the football, because you're in college, you're working as a personal trainer, and you're playing the football, so you're quite busy, and there is, you know, a balance to be struck. Spoke there to James Finnerty about he's not working at the moment, he's just playing football for Bowes, and he can eat and he can sleep and he can go to the gym, whereas for you, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, stuff that has to be put in place from a plan point of view for sleep, hydration, food, work, to be able to perform in all of those areas.
Yeah, well, it goes, there's more detail in planning, especially this year with everything, whether it's going to the gym, college work, and then obviously my own work in the gym as well, like, you know. So I kind of sit down on a Sunday and plan out my week. Obviously it doesn't always go to plan, there's interruptions and things come up, like, so I try always plan at the weekend for the coming week, and then that way I know, right, I'm going to get this done this week, or I have this person in the gym, or I always try stay on top of things as much as I can.
Now, I spoke to someone recently who says there will definitely be two red cards or more in Finn Harps against Derry on Friday, because if it's a local derby and the crowds and so on and so forth. What do you expect? Is this your first kind of derby apart from Longford against Athlone? Or Bray against... were Cabin Teddy around when you played for Bray, no?
No.
So this is like big crowd, the Donegal Derry derby, like, should be a cracker up there in Finn Park on Friday.
Yeah, I'm looking for. I don't know what to expect, really. Like, I've heard obviously different things, and then obviously when we go up to Brandywell, like, it'll be different use wise and stuff, but I'm expecting a good crowd and a bit of tenacity and tackles and stuff, so I'd say you'll get into the game quite quickly, like.
Yeah, from speaking to James, I asked him, he's only into senior football like 7 games and getting used to playing in front of crowds. You're obviously a little bit further along that way. In those type of games, like, say in Finn Park on Friday, like, it'll be a mad red hot atmosphere. Derry will probably have a few hundred fans there. Is that something you listen to hear? Does it affect you in any way? If you're, you know, if there's a 50-50 about the drop, ball's about to drop and you hear the crowd roaring, will that influence you making that tackle or playing that pass or clearing that ball, or is it totally just background noise?
Most of the time it's background noise. It's only really when the play stops for a minute or whatever, if the ball's going to a player, you're picking the ball up for throw-in, that's when you can kind of hear the crowd. So it's up to each individual what they choose to hear or what way they take it. But during the game, it's just like, just focus, like, you're just eyes on the ball and whatever, marking your man. And so it doesn't really interfere with me personally, but obviously different games, I don't know what's going to happen on Friday, but it'll be interesting anyway.
Lastly, Dan, how long are you back from England now, full time?
I think 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a long time to be back, and you're now fully immersed in life as a League of Ireland footballer and working and stuff. Like, looking back on the period of how long it took you to get used to not being in football in England to now being here, like, how would you look back on that time now, 5 years on, and like, really settled into being at Dublin or living in Dublin, playing football and working, like?
At the start, it's obviously hard to adapt, but it's something that you have to adapt to quite quickly, because otherwise you're just going to get stuck in a rut, whether that's with your football, it won't progress, or whether it's with work, you'll just work in a job that you don't enjoy. So you just have to get yourself out of the hole and, I suppose, move on from the past and get on with your football, stay focused, and then drive towards something outside of football that you want to do, whether it's in college or whether it's working with your dad or anyone like that. You just have to have a plan in place and stick to it, really.
Yeah, because again, from speaking to James, I asked him the same question, and he's only like 4 months into being home, and he tried a job but didn't really work out, and he's thinking of going to Foss or maybe going to college and checking out the education routes because he hasn't got his leaving cert and that. Like, when you came home, how early or late did like that drop in your head that I have to actually do something else here, and how did you go about doing it, because you didn't have a leaving cert either?
I actually did my leaving cert.
Okay.
Yeah.
In England, or did you come back? How did that work?
I studied on my own in England, then when the summer break came around, I did it at home then, yeah. So
I have to sack my researcher, and that's actually me.
Yes, you do.
Okay, well, I'll ask you that question. So how did you do, because I know, who was it at Blackburn? Irish international.
Darragh Lennon
did the same thing. As part of his contract, he had a tutor and came home through his leaving, and now he has, you know, an opportunity when he does retire to do something, and you did something similar.
Yeah, well, mine would have been off my own back mostly, because I just go home to my digs and then just do my bit of study when I felt like it, like, and then I get a few notes and by email and stuff, and I try my best to do whatever, 7-8 hours a week while they're all in school, and then when I came home for the summer, I had a couple of weeks to put the head down and study, and then sat the exams. Obviously, I had to make changes to whatever honours and pass in a couple of subjects, but not much really, but I was quite happy with getting it done and just having it there. Like, I wasn't really thinking about it at the time. I didn't think, I'll definitely need this in the future, but I just thought it's definitely great to say, like, to say to people, I've done my leaving cert, and they'd be like, oh, how did you do it and stuff, and it's just, at the time, it's not much you think about it, you just do it, like, so you're only young, 17, I was 17 when I did mine, so it's like driving, the earlier you do it, the better it is, like.
That's really interesting and something that I didn't know, and like, so that probably made the process of trying to figure out what you wanted to do easier, because you knew that you could go to college if you wanted, because you had the leaving cert.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of background, like, you know, background for when I came home, or if I came home at the time. I obviously didn't think I was going to come home, but it just gave me more avenues to look to for what I wanted to do, and gave me more opportunities for when I did come home and I could look into more stuff. And obviously my brain was still functioning in a different way than just football. It took my mind off the football, and it was great. I really enjoyed it, like, the year.
Back up, not background. Back up to
correct,
being a footballer.
Yes.
So lastly, if, you know, young footballers are listening who are either away and not, you know, I know the education in England isn't really worth anything in comparison to a leaving cert, or a player who's just come back who is wondering, you know, like James, and there's so many more, even that Bowles team and all the teams who've come back, like, what would you say to them about not putting all of the eggs or the balls in the basket of football?
I think it's more important than you think at that age. You wouldn't think, you just think football, I want to be a footballer, everything's football, like, but there's more important things in life for the future, for your own career, and obviously for income when you're done football. Obviously, if you're successful in football, then it's not something you need to worry about, but for the majority of us, we have to have another option when we finish football. So it's definitely something, even if it's not the leaving cert, just whether it's something when you're 18, 19, a part-time college course or anything, just for your brain, and obviously to say, right, I have this degree for when I finish football, it's something I can further, like, you know, because it's obviously become a massive thing, even with elite professional footballers like Chiellini has done different business degrees and stuff. So it's just shown that it is really important for when you finish.
And it's also really good for your headspace as well, that you're not just focused on football all the time. Dan O'Reilly, thanks a million for coming in. Good luck on Friday. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
The best League of Ireland podcast in the business. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store. This is Off the Ball.
Yeah, we're nearly at the end of the podcast for this week. Just a quick recap of the fixtures for this coming weekend. Firstly, in the First Division, 4 games taking place on Friday. They're all at 7:45. It's at Lone Town against Drogheda United. Galway host Limerick. What a game. Shells against Bray at Tolka Park. That's an important game for Shells given their current run. And Wexford hosting Longford Town. One game on Saturday. It's at 7:00 down there in Cork. It's Cove Ramblers against Cabinteely. Well, from a Premier Division point of view, it's a busy weekend. Again, 4 games taking place on Friday. They're all at 7:45. It's St. Pat's against Dundalk and Richmond, UCD Waterford in the UCD Bowl. Again, you're wondering, why are there two Dublin teams playing at the same time in the same city? Doesn't really make too much sense to me. Finn Harps against Derry, that game is, according to this, at, Dan, what time is that game at?
7:45.
Okay, this, I'll sack live score because that says it's at 7. And Cork against Rovers, which is the live TV game, that game is on down there in Turner's Cross. And one game on Saturday, Sligo Rovers against Bowes, as usual. That's a usual Sligo Rovers kickoff time of 7:45. That's it for the latest episode of the Off the Ball League of Ireland podcast. Thank you very much for listening to Dan O'Reilly, James Finnerty and Gary Cronin. As I mentioned, if you're listening, you can watch those interviews in full on youtube.com/offtheball. And we will speak to you next Wednesday. Bye.
Off the Ball's League of Ireland podcast. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.